Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Surviving the Days Ahead. I am your host, Reverend Deborah Marshall. Today we will continue our discussion about herbal remedies and the list of essential oils that are a must-have for your kit, for your supply kit. Now, has anyone started putting together your disaster supplies and first aid supplies yet? I hope the answer is yes. Yes, but if you haven't, it is very important that you do that. You need to start thinking that way. We must pray for peace and work toward that always, but we need to also have a plan in place just in case of a disaster. You know, things can happen, and also if war breaks out. Has your locality designated a fallout shelter in your area? I implore all of the town managers and mayors to address this important issue now. If the sirens or warning sounds go off, it is too late, you know. Ministry of churches with large basements that are equipped with kitchens and restrooms, please consider volunteering your space as a fallout shelter. It wouldn't be something that would happen very often. It may not happen at all, but it would be a wonderful thing if we had as many fallout shelters in different areas of a town as we do churches, which are very helpful. It would be very helpful if they would consider volunteering their space in an emergency of that magnitude. Also, government buildings with basements would also work, or school buildings that have basements, especially any building that doesn't have a lot of windows in the basement. You know, the fewer the better, because you do have to block those off. If you're using it as a fallout shelter, you need to try to block those off so nothing can get in. No dust, you know, can get in. Now, I'm hoping and praying that we are all moving away from war and toward peace. However, we all need to plan for that possibility. I am living in a small city that, as far as I am aware, has no plan in place at all. If it has, the public needs to be made aware of it, because I haven't heard anything about any of the shelters being opened or, you know, being designated. Now, I'm going to begin with a quick rundown of suggested supplies for a first aid kit. Now, you can get a good first aid kit from the Red Cross or from other companies, and, you know, get one that has quite a bit of stuff in it, and then you can add to it. If you haven't already started doing it from scratch, getting a kit is a nice departure point. Most of them don't have everything you might need, so it's better to decide to get one than start adding your own things to it gradually. Now, excuse me, I still have the virus. First aid kit, 1% hydrocortisone cream. And, you know, you can buy those little teeny single-dose things, but my opinion, a regular-sized tube of that is better. Antifungal ointment, that's also a very good thing to have. Antibacterial ointment, such as Neosporin, is just a brand name. There are others out there that are probably every bit as effective. Antiseptic wound cleanser, that is also a good thing to have. Aloe vera gel for sunburns and skin irritations. Insect bite treatment. You can also get burn gel that I believe it has aloe in it, and it's soothing. And it has lidocaine in it, you know, to help stop the pain of burns. Insect bite treatments, and there are some that would be designated that way, but you could also use the hydrocortisone cream for that. Bandages of all kinds. Mold skin for blisters. Elastic compression wrap, you know, the ACE bandages is what we always call those. Disposable gloves, and vinyl is generally okay. Digital thermometers, scissors and safety pins, Q-tips, tweezers, and not a bad thing to have a magnifying glass, because if you're trying to get splinters out with tweezers, a magnifying glass can be very helpful. Eye drops, you know, just general like Visine or some type of soothing eye drop. There is an eyewash. I believe it's Bausch & Lomb putting it out. And I've tried that. I'm allergic to everything. And what I'm finding is even with my allergies, that eyewash is wonderful. So that might be something to consider having in your kit. Rehydration. I'm sorry. My writing is terrible. Oral rehydration salts of some kind. Documents. Your health insurance documents and claim forms. And you can have the real document in page protectors, but it's also a good idea as far as things like your personal information if you can put it on a jump drive so that if you go to a hospital, they can put it into a computer and get the information printed off. You know, you can see it. And it would be neater than people who have bad handwriting like mine. Proof of yellow fever vaccination, copies of all prescriptions, contact card information containing the street addresses, phone numbers, and email addresses of the family members or close contacts, health care providers at home, and having a suture kit and also a suture removal kit would be good too. Diabetic testing supplies, particularly if you are diabetic, insulin, if you are, inhalers, epinephrine auto-injector pens for severe allergic reactions. Some of this came off, I think most of this actually came off of ready.gov, medical alert bracelet or necklace if you have allergies, antacids. You could also, if you have your purse with you, you could also have a nice printed out list of all of your allergies and medicines you're on and your doctor, all of that on one page. And that's a good thing to do, but it's still also a very good thing to put it on a jump drive, and you can wear that like a necklace. So if you get separated from your pocketbook or wherever you keep your list, you'll still have it. You'll still have all of that information with you. Antacids, diarrhea medicine. Antihistamines like Benadryl, motion sickness medicine, cough drops, cough syrups, decongestants, medicine for pain or fever such as Tylenol or ibuprofen, mild laxatives, mild sedative or other sleep aid, and with a lot of people, the antihistamines will make you sleepy. So something like, for most people, it helps them sleep. So something like Benadryl, if you have that, might also work as a mild sedative. Now, saline nose spray. And why saline? Because that helps rinse out allergens and this kind of thing and moisturizes. But unlike the other stronger nose sprays, you don't have to worry about rebound swelling. If you use the other kinds of nose sprays, probably all of us at one time have done it when you had a bad cold, and you found out that about 24 hours after you took that dose, you started really getting swollen and tight, and it's because that's what your body does. So you have to try to avoid those if you can. Now, to prevent sickness, hand sanitizer, gel, or wipes. Water purification tablets, insect repellent, permethrin insect repellent clothing, and there I'll be giving you some ideas for as far as the kinds of things you can use as far as aromatherapy goes for insect as an insect repellent, a bed net, sunscreen. Sunglasses and hat, personal safety equipment if you have any, such as canes, walkers, if you have someone in the family that needs that kind of thing. Earplugs, and somebody put this in, I think it was on the ready.gov list, latex condoms. I don't know how that ended up on the first aid list, but it did. Now, okay. Now I'm going to be talking a little bit more from the book that we were talking from last the last show. This is The Complete Illustrated Holistic Herbal, a safe and practical guide for making and using herbal remedies by David Hoffman. And I'm going to talk a little bit more with this, and then we're going to go to some of the essential oil booklets or books. Now, I'm not sure exactly where we left off, but I'm going to talk about ointments or salves, which are semi-solid preparations that can be applied to the skin. Depending on the purpose which they are designed, they are innumerable ways of making ointments, and they can vary in texture from greasy to a thick paste, depending on what base is used and what components are mixed together. Now, this book talks about mixing things with Vaseline, and I don't like that. For one thing, some people are allergic. For another, it's not organic, or it's not it's man-made, and I'm not sure that it's the best thing to use for some people. Some people can have an allergic reaction to it, too. So I don't really recommend using Vaseline when you're making an aromatherapy product, but that you can do that if you want. It certainly talks about it in this book. Now, any herb can be used for making ointments, but arnica, which is supposed to be good for bruises, for instance, chickweed, comfrey root, elderflower, golden seal, greater plantain, lady's mantle, marigold flower, marshmallow root, slippery elm bark, and woundwort and yarrow are particularly good to use in external mixtures. Now, note that the arnica is not advisable on open wounds, so it would be for bruising. For the specific use of each herb, please refer to the herbal section. The simple way to prepare an ointment is by using, and he's saying, petroleum jelly as a base, and I don't like that. You make your own by using your fats and your oils, and that's what makes a greasy base. Instead of the petroleum jelly, which I don't care for. Let's see, but it says petroleum jelly is easy to handle, so a simple ointment can be made very quickly. Besides, this has the advantage of not being absorbed itself by the skin, making it useful, for instance, as the base for an anti-catarrhal balm, which will be described later. Here, the petroleum jelly acts merely as a carrier for the volatile oils, which can thus evaporate and enter the nasal cavities without being absorbed through the skin. Well, you don't ever want to use Vaseline in your nose if you can help it. If you do, make sure it doesn't go too far back. You want it just in the very front. You don't want to stick a Q-tip way back in your nose with it. And the reason for that is because your body heat can make it thinner and it can get down in your lungs, and that's a good way to get pneumonia. So you don't want to let that happen. Now, the basic method for petroleum jelly ointment is to simmer 2 tablespoons of an herb, 7 ounces of an herb in 7 ounces of petroleum jelly, or 200 grams, for about 10 minutes. A single herb or mixture of fresh or dried roots, leaves, or flowers can be used. In more traditional ointments, instead of using petroleum jelly, a combination of oils is used that acts as a vehicle for the remedies and helps them to be absorbed through the skin, plus hardening agents to create the texture desired. The following example is a prescription for Unguentum Simplex, a simple ointment from the British Pharmacopoeia of 1867. 2 ounces of white wax, 3 ounces of lard, and 3 ounces of almond oil. Now, that would be used as the base. Now, you could use lard if you wanted to, but if you do, I would say use vegetable shortening, not lard from an animal. Now, to make an herbal ointment, use 1 pint of the appropriate water extract, that's 500 cc's, and that would be like an infusion or a tea made from the herb. Then strain off the liquid for use in step 4. Now, 2, measure out the fat and oil for the base. So you're making the herbal decoction or infusion. Then you're measuring out the fat and oil for the base. Excuse me. Then pour 3 fluid ounces olive oil or almond oil into the pan and mix the fat and oil together. Now, add the strained herbal extract and stir it into the vase. I'll tell you another thing that's kind of nice that you might try it and see whether you like it. Coconut oil. In the jar, coconut oil, forgive me, I'm losing my page again. In the jar, coconut oil is a soft solid. When you touch it, when you put it in your palm, it immediately turns into a clear liquid. And so it makes a melting lotion, you know, like a ointment, but it melts really easily into your skin. And that's a very pleasant thing. It doesn't have much of any kind of smell to it. It's very mild. And that may be something that you want to try in place of the 3 ounces of olive oil or almond oil. You might try that and see how it works together. So then add the strained herbal extract and stir it into the base of the oils, and then simmer until the water has completely evaporated and the extract has become incorporated. You don't want to boil it, because if you do that, you're going to lose some of the properties of the infusion or deconcoction. You don't want to do that. And it's better to have a double boiler, that is a pan with water and then another pan or a bowl of some kind set on top. And that way you don't burn it. You don't risk a fire and you don't risk burning everything. So you mix the fat and the oil together, and then you add the herbal extract or the infusion into the base. Then you simmer until the water has completely evaporated and the extract has become incorporated into the oil. You might find it easier to place the pan in a larger pan of water to prevent burning. Be careful not to overheat the mixture and watch particularly for the point when all the water has evaporated and the bubbling stops. If additional thickeners such as beeswax, which is what I'd recommend, need to be incorporated, they can be added at this point and melted into the base, heating slowly and stirring until blended. And the amount of beeswax usually will be, it'll be with the recipe, whatever recipe you're following. Now, if a perishable base is used, such as lard, a drop of tincture of benzoin should be added for each 1 ounce of the base to act as a preservative. But if you use a vegetable lard, sort of like Crisco, I think you would probably not have to worry as much. But because regular lard is an animal product, it could spoil and smell bad and not be good. So now you pour the mixture, and as it cools, you pour the mixture into a container, and then I would put it in the, I think it would be wiser to put it in the fridge, or a cool, dry place. Now, if you want a cream, if you want to do something and you make something like this and you want a cream instead of an ointment, after you have mixed everything together, then as it cools, you take it off of the water, off of the fire or off of the water, and as it cools, you use a whip. You use either a whip by hand or you use a electric mixer, and you start whipping it. And as it cools off, as you whip it, the air gets incorporated into it, and it starts to cool faster. And what it does is it turns into a cream if you do it that way. And it's nice. A cream is nice. Now, I just turned too many pages at the same time, I believe. Now, compresses. A compress, or fomentation is another word for that, is an excellent way to apply remedy to the skin to accelerate the healing process. And to make a compress, use a clean cloth made of either linen, gauze, cotton, wool, or cotton, and work it in a hot infusion or deconcoction. Place this as hot as possible upon the affected area. You don't want to burn them. As heat enhances the action of the herbs, either change the compress when it cools down or cover the cloth with plastic or wax paper. And I would say plastic wrap is better. And place on it a hot water bottle that will keep the area warm but not burning. Then change when necessary. Now, all of the vulnerary herbs make a good compress, as do stimulants and diaphoretics in many situations. poultices. Now, this is an old-fashioned remedy you don't hear much about anymore. Poultices, the action of a poultice is very similar to that of a compress, but instead of using liquid extract or infusions, the solid plant material is used for poultice. Either fresh or dried herbs can be used to make a poultice. With the fresh plant, you apply the bruised leaves or root material either directly onto the skin or place them between thin gauze. Dried herbs must be made into a paste by adding either hot water or apple cider vinegar until the right consistency is obtained. To keep the poultice warm, you can use the same method as for the compress and place a hot water bottle on it. Now, when you are applying the herb directly to the skin, it is often helpful first to cover the skin with a small amount of oil, as this will protect it and make removal of the poultice easier. Poultices can be made from warming and stimulating herbs, from vulnerabilities, astringents, and also from emollients, which are demulcents that are soothing and softening to the skin, such as comfrey root, flaxseed, marshmallow root, oatmeal, quince seed, and slippery elm bark. Poultices are often used to draw pus out of the skin, and there are a multitude of old recipes. Some of them use cabbage. I've heard of that too, which is excellent. Others use bread and milk, some even soap and sugar. I don't know about the soap and sugar thing, but I've heard of the bread and milk, and I've certainly heard of the cabbage. Now, liniments are specifically formulated to be easily absorbed through the skin, as they are used in massages that aim at the stimulation of muscles and ligaments. They must only be used externally, never internally. And that's something you have to have a lot of respect for, both herbal products. You need to have respect for both herbal products and for essential oils, because they can be very strong. And you might have allergies that you didn't know you had. So you have to be very careful with things and respect them. You don't want to just start throwing things together haphazardly. Now, the following liniment is described by Jethro Kloss in his book, Back to Eden. Combine 2 ounces of powdered myrrh, which is a resin, 1 ounce powdered golden seal, 1/2 ounce cayenne pepper, 1 quart rubbing alcohol, 70%, and mix together and let stand for 7 days. Shake well every day, decant it off, so you would put it through a strainer, and bottle it in corked bottles. If you do not have golden seal, make it without. Another excellent liniment that warms and relaxes muscles at the same time is made from equal parts of lobelia and crimp bark, plus a pinch of cayenne pepper. This is made into a tincture or liniment in the same way. Now, herbal components to the muscles and ligaments. Liniments are usually made of a mixture of the herb with alcohol, or occasionally with apple cider vinegar, sometimes with an addition of herbal oils. The main ingredient of a liniment is usually cayenne, which may be combined with lobelia or other remedies. Now, oils. As you can see in the herbal section of the book, many herbs are rich in essential oils. There are herbs like peppermint, which the oils are volatile, which makes the plant aromatic. And there are also those whose oils are not particularly aromatic, such as St. John's wort. Herbal oils can be used in 2 forms, depending on the mode of extraction. First of all, there are the pure essential oils, which are extracted from the herb by a complex and careful process of distillation. Only an expert can make these at home. Now, these oils are best obtained from specialist suppliers, and they have an address for different suppliers on another page, who distill them as a basis for aromatherapy, and as such take care that they are as pure as possible. So we talked about that a little bit. The best oils to use are pure plant oils, such as olive, sunflower, or almond, but any good pressed vegetable oil can be used for carrier oils. And these are preferable to mineral oils. The carrier oils, the reason for that is that they carry the essential oils that you're going to put in there. So they dilute them, and they also carry them so that you can use them as a massage oil, for instance. Now, a typical and very soothing example of such an oil is St. John's wort. To make an herbal oil, first cut the herb, finally cover it with oil and put it in a clear glass container. Place this in the sun or leave in a warm place for 2 to 3 weeks, shaking the container daily. After that time, filter the liquid into a dark glass container and store the extracted oil. A typical and very soothing example of such an oil is St. John's wort oil, which makes a very red oil that can be used externally for massages and to help sunburns and heal wounds. It can also be taken internally in very small doses to ease stomach pain. I would be very careful with that. I know St. John's wort is a remedy for depression, for instance. And you can get it in herbal form, you know, in capsules and this kind of thing. Now, I'm not going to go through the chemistry of each plant, what each one does. Now, let me see here. He has a language that I don't hear in every, in every book. Some of the things he says are hard to understand, I think, in today's world. Alternatives. Alternatives are herbs that will gradually restore the proper function of the body and increase health and vitality. They were at one time known as blood cleansers. The ones that you hear the most about would be bladder wrack, blue flag, I've never heard of that one, bog bean, burdock, cleavers, echinacea, figwort, fringe tree, fumitory, garlic, and guacacum, I've not heard of that, golden seal, mountain grape, nettles, passiflower, poke root, queen's delight, red clover, sarsaparilla, sassafras, wild indigo, and yellow dock are all considered alternatives. Now, let me see here. I'm kind of flipping through. Anti-catarrhals. The catarrhal, when you say catarrhal, you mean lots of mucus. Your body's producing an excess of mucus. The anti-catarrhal herbs help the body to remove excess catarrhal or mucus buildups, whether they occur in the sinus area or other parts of the body. American cranesbill, bearberry, boneset, cayenne, colt's foot, echinacea, elder, eyebright, garlic, golden seal, golden rod, hyssop, Iceland moss, Irish moss, marshmallow, mullein, peppermint, sage, thyme, and wild indigo and yarra are all considered good for getting rid of excessive secretion and mucus. Those that can help relieve or prevent vomiting are balm, black horehound, cayenne, cloves, dill, fennel, lavender, meadow sweet, and peach leaves. Now, I have also used peppermint for an upset stomach, and that just inhaling it sometimes on, say, cloth, if you're sick to your stomach, putting it on a drop or two on a wet washcloth and putting it, you know, cold washcloth on your forehead or on your neck, and the fumes from it can help the nausea. And I will say it works for me anyway. Anti-inflammatory. The anti-inflammatory herbs help the body to combat inflammation. Now, see, these are things because in an emergency, you may not have a drugstore open. You may not have a doctor that you can get prescriptions from. And you may have to improvise if you get sick and there's nothing really open that you can go to. So, and, you know, these are things you might want to wait and use when you are at the end of your supplies, too. I highly recommend you get a book with photographs of herbs, And I also recommend that if you can find someone in your area that gives a class that will take you out, you know, either lead the class around someplace outdoors and show you what each thing looks like in the wild so that you have some idea of how it grows and what it looks like. That is invaluable. And there are classes like that to be had just about everywhere, I think. Very good thing to do. If you have an herb shop and anybody that practices herbology or aromatherapy, you might want to consider talking to them because they may have the knowledge to lead such a class or a group, or they may know someone that does. So that's a good thing to do. Now, herbs mentioned under demulcents, emollients, and vulnerabilities will often act in this way. Let's see, we're talking about anti-inflammatories, especially when they're applied externally. Black willow, bog bean, chamomile, devil's claw, marigold, meadowsweet, St. John's wort, white poplar, and witch hazel. Now, let me see here. Antilithic. Now, that's something I've not heard in any other book, but it prevents the formation of stones or gravel in the urinary system, in other words, kidney stones, and can help the body in its removal of such things. Bearberry, and that's important if you are someone who forms kidney stones often. You should be doing some reading, you know, sit down and read about some of these herbs and some of the essential oils that can help you so that you have it written down and you know where to find it if something happens and you can't get to a doctor or you can't get to a pharmacy. Now, bearberry, buchu, corn silk, couch grass, gravel root, hydrangea, parsley, Piert, P-I-E-R-T, I'm not familiar with that at all. Pellitory of the wall, I have never heard of. Sea holly, stone root, and wild carrot. So I would recommend that you look at these, right, you know, get a book, though. You need a book, and if you can find one that has pictures of those things, that's a very good thing to have. Now, most essential oils are in some way antimicrobial. And antiviral, most of them have some of that activity. Essential oils are in a real way, very much the immune system of a plant. So, of course, it would be. The antimicrobial herbs can help the body to destroy or resist pathogenic microorganisms. Aniseed, bearberry, caraway oil, cayenne, clove. But now you got to remember, not all of these are going to be good on your skin, and you have to learn how to handle these things. So you need to read about it. Clove, coriander, echinacea, elecampania, garlic, gentian, juniper, marigold, marjoram, myrrh, peppermint, rosemary, rue, sage, southern wood, thyme, wild indigo, and wormwood. Now, you have to be careful with some of these. So make sure that if you have a recipe using it, make sure you follow that recipe carefully. Marjoram can be used for a number of things, and one of the things it can do is lower your blood pressure. So if you have someone that has very low blood pressure anyway, that may be one you don't want to use. Rosemary can, and some people that are sensitive to it, can help if they are an epileptic. It can help to cause a seizure. So you've got to be careful with rosemary also. Let's see. The average person probably wouldn't have that problem. Now, antispasmodics. The antispasmodic herbs can prevent or ease spasms or cramps. Black cohosh, black haw, chamomile, cramp bark, lady's slipper, lime blossom, lobelia, mistletoe, mother's wort, pasque flower, skullcap, skunk cabbage, thyme, valerian, vervain, wild lettuce, and wild yam. Valerian is the plant that originally, that Valium was synthesized out of. And it's a much milder version. You know, it's a lot milder than the stronger medicine that you get in a pill. And it smells terrible. I cannot imagine taking that in a tea, and that's the truth. Aromatic herbs have a strong and often pleasant odor and can stimulate the digestive system. And they are often used to add aroma and taste to other medicines. Angelica, aniseed, balm, caraway, cardamom, celery, chamomile, cinnamon, cloves, coriander, dill, fennel, hyssop, ginger, meadowsweet, pennyroyal, peppermint, rosemary, valerian, and wood betony come into that category. Now, let me see here. Cardiotonics. Cardiotonics affect the heart. Their specific function should be looked up in the herbal section, and you use them very, very sparingly and carefully. Hawthorn, motherwort, and night blooming cereus, C-E-R-E-U-S, which I have never even heard of, and it is an absolutely beautiful flower with that. Now, let me see. I'm not going to read every list that they have here. It's a huge amount. Diaphoretic. Diaphoretics aid the skin in the elimination of toxins and promote perspiration. Angelica, bayberry, boneset, buchu, cayenne, chamomile, elder, fennel, garlic, ginger, goldenrod, lime blossom, peppermint, pleurisy root, prickly ash, thuja, thyme, and white horehound, and yarrow all come into that category. Now, let me see. Medix cause vomiting. And that can be good if you have a poison and you need the treatment for that poison happens to making the person throw up. I know you've all probably heard of Serapis Epicac. And bloodroot, boneset, elderflowers. Let's see how I can. It's the plant that Epicac comes from. Epicac Kuanha. Lobelia, Senega, and squill are the plants that are helpful for that. Now, let me see. I'm just flipping through here to find ones that... Now, the hypnotics, which will induce sleep, not a hypnotic trance, but help people to sleep. Chamomile, and they don't have lavender listed, but lavender helps. Chamomile, California poppy, hops, Jamaican dogwood, mistletoe, passion flower, skullcap, and valerian. Trust me, the passion flower tastes a whole lot better than the valerian would because that stuff stinks. Wild lettuce, and I'm just going to flip through, and vulnerary. Now, that's a term that I have not heard before, I'm embarrassed to say, so I'm going to read that to you. Vulneraries are applied externally and aid the body in the healing of wounds and cuts. Aloe, American cranesbill, arnica, bistort, black willow, burdock, chickweed, cleavers, comfrey, daisy, elder, alcapania, fenugreek, flaxseed, garlic, golden seal, greater plantain, horsetail, hyssop, Irish moss, marigold, marshmallow, mullein, and marshmallow is a plant, by the way, for anyone that didn't know that. And that, I believe, is what I think that an extract of that may be how marshmallows are created, actually. Mullein, myrrh, shepherd's purse, slippery elm, St. John's wort, thyme, witch hazel, wood betony, and yarrow. So, you know, you have to really read and learn what you're doing with these things. If you have a good book and you read about them and how to handle them, and then make yourself a list of recipes for different things. That would probably be very helpful to you. Let me see here. Time goes so fast. Let me see. Many plants have a direct toxic effect on microbes. In other words, antibacterials. The first effective antibiotic drug, penicillin, was discovered in a plant, a fungus. Interestingly enough, an old Welch remedy for festering sores is based upon moldy bread. For years, this was mocked by the medical profession as an old wives' tale until it became clear that there is a definite biochemical basis for this seemingly outlandish prescription, as the mold is caused by a fungi. Now, herbs work in complex ways that cannot always be explained. It's not enough research has been done, and the processes whereby they deal with infections are numerous. The best antimicrobials that can be used safely to combat infections include echinacea, garlic, myrrh, nasturtium, thyme, wild indigo, and wormwood. Garlic oil is another powerful antimicrobial worth mentioning. It was used on the wounded during First World War as an antiseptic applied with a sphagnum moss dressing, believe it or not, in World War I. Now, so I guess it would be pretty much like a poultice. Now, herbal antiseptic powder. In the early part of this century, the antiseptic powder of some plants oils was compared with that of phenol, a commonly used chemical antiseptic. It was found that many volatile oils are stronger than phenol, with thyme oil being the strongest. The experiment looked at the antiseptic action on beef tea, which had been infected with water from a sewer system, and determined at what dilution there was no more antiseptic action. The chart below shows at what dilution in parts per 1,000 parts antiseptic action ceased, and thyme oil proved to be 8 times stronger than phenol. So you have to respect these things. Many other plants were also stronger than phenol. Phenol was 5.6, and thyme was 0.7, which in this case means it kept working a lot longer. And the oils that they were comparing with phenol were sweet orange, thyme, sweet orange, verbena, rose, clove, eucalyptus, peppermint, orris root, anise, rosemary, lavender, fennel, lemon, sassafras, lime, and angelica. And the strongest was thyme, as far as antiseptic properties. Now, diaphoretic is a remedy that induces the body to increase the amount of perspiration. This, in turn, increases elimination of toxins through the skin and helps to cleanse the body. Diaphoretics are indicated in a wide range of conditions, but nowhere more than in the treatment of fevers and infections affecting the whole system. Now, I'm not going to keep going through this. I'm going to switch since we're going to run out of time, because I wanted to... I can get to this in a hurry here. Your basic care kit. This is from the Complete Book of Essential Oils and Aromatherapy by Valerie Ann Warwood. And I highly recommend this book. Chapter 2, Your Basic Care Kit. Lavender, tea tree, peppermint, chamomile, eucalyptus, geranium, rosemary, thyme, and lemon, and clove. Those are the essential oils that she considers to be your basic care kit. It says, if I had to choose the 10 most versatile and useful essential oils for the average home medicine chest or medicine cabinet, these would be they. Although these oils are chosen first for their medicinal properties and their ability to deal with a wide range of health complaints, you will find that they also feature strongly throughout the book and are useful for a diversity of purposes, from skin care to gardening and from home care to celebrations. The treatments outlined in this section are straightforward yet effective. Some of the conditions listed here are discussed in more detail in other chapters. And I'm not going to read every word here, but lavender one of my favorites, is capable of many important jobs and is a delight to use. Every home should have a bottle of lavender, if no other oil, because it is so very effective in the treatment of burns and scalds. Lavender oil is a natural antibiotic, antiseptic, antidepressant, sedative, and detoxifier, which promotes healing and prevents scarring, and also stimulates the immune system and contributes to the healing process by stimulating the cells of a wound to regenerate more quickly. Although not known specifically as a circulatory stimulant, lavender oil certainly seems to allay the effects of clinical shock, and as a mood tonic and antidepressant, it helps to deal with the psychological shock of an injury. It also has a multitude of other qualities which make it a truly indispensable oil. If you have trouble, now some people say, oh, I hate the smell of lavender. The smell of the real essential oil is very different from the lavender you get that's artificial, you know, and very, in you know, over-the-counter drugstore type soaps and things that say lavender on it. Most of them are not like the real lavender. They're floral, but they don't smell like lavender to me. If you get a bottle of lavender and smell it, it's wonderful. Now, not everybody's going to like it, of course, but it's nice room deodorizer. Mix it in some water and use it in a spray bottle and spray it around the room. You can mix lavender. I like peppermint with it. Not everybody likes that combination, but I do. But you can squirt that if you have a lot of static electricity and you keep getting shocks during the heating season. Spray it on your rug just a little bit. And it puts moisture back in the air, and you have less trouble with being shocked, with having those little. I had a cat the other day whose fur was sitting out straight all over her body. She had so much static in her. Every time we touched, you know, it was like a spark. Now, another thing with lavender is spraying it just, you know, like take the little bottle and just do a little dot or two on your pillowcase. You don't want to put a lot on there. Just a dot or two on your pillowcase at night. And that will help. At least it does for me. It helps to promote sleep. You know, we tend to think of things because modern medicine is so strong. You know, with herbal medicine and with essential oils, the effects, if you do it right, are gentle. And you don't take something and clobber the condition with it. You use it gently and respectfully. So even though this promotes sleep, it's not going to make you unconscious. You know what I mean? You're not going to just zap by very quickly with it. But it does indeed help sleep. Another one that I've read in more than one place is the scent of vanilla being something that helps with sleep also. And I do like that as well. Now, let me see. Lavender oil is a natural, as I said, antibiotic, antiseptic, antidepressant, sedative, and detoxifier, which promotes healing and prevents scarring, and also stimulates the immune system and contributes to the healing process by stimulating the cells of a wound to regenerate more quickly. Although not known specifically as a circulatory stimulant, lavender oil certainly seems to allay the effects of clinical shock, and as a mood tonic and antidepressant, it helps to deal with the psychological shock of injury. It also has a multitude of other qualities which make it a truly indispensable oil. Now, tea tree. I hate the smell, but it is a good thing to have in your medicine chest. The antiseptic action of tea tree is thought to be 100 times more powerful than carbolic acid, and yet it is non-poisonous to humans. The Aborigines have been using this indigenous Australian tree in their medications for centuries, and today tea tree is the subject of a great deal of international research. It's impressive. Antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal properties make it useful in a wide range of conditions. It is used in the treatment of candida and all sorts of infections from ringworm, sunburn, acne, athlete's foot, toothache, and pyorrhea, among other things. You can find tea tree toothpaste in health food stores that have tea tree oil in them, and myrrh. Tea tree and myrrh, and what's the other one? Well, those are two that I've seen. Now, peppermint. Peppermint has been used for many ancient cultures, including the Egyptians, Chinese, and American Indians, no doubt because of its extremely useful health-promoting properties. It is an excellent digestive. It helps the respiratory system and circulation. It is an anti-inflammatory and an antiseptic. These qualities make it a good oil for the treatment of indigestion, flatulence, bad breath, flu, a catarrh or a lot of mucus, varicose veins, headaches and migraines, skin irritations, rheumatism, toothache and fatigue. It even helps keep mice, fleas, and ants away. Bugs hate peppermint. Its menthol is in it, you know, and it's strong. It's got a strong menthol, so you'll find that most insects hate it. Now, there are several types of chamomile essential oil. Chamomile, German chamomile, is an excellent variety, and its beautiful deep dark blue color due to its high azelaine content comes as a bonus. Another excellent variation variety is chamomile Roman or Roman chamomile. It is particularly good for the treatment of nervous conditions and insomnia. Beware, though, of chamomile Maroc or Mentis multicaulis, which is not a true chamomile and cannot be used as such. I've not even heard of that one, but perhaps some of you have. Although chamomile is antibacterial, antiseptic, and disinfectant, it is most valued for its anti-inflammatory properties. These apply to internal conditions like rheumatism as well as in external inflammations. Chamomile is indispensable if you have children because it can be used for teething troubles and in the bath to ease nerves and, nervousness. Now, let's see. Chamomile is used in the treatment of burns, including sunburn, psoriasis, eczema, asthma, hay fever, diarrhea, spasms, and strains. Nausea, fever, and all nervous and depressive states. Its analgesic, diuretic, sedative, and calming properties make chamomile an extremely desirable oil for kicking back the tranquilizer habit. It is invaluable, and in anorexia nervosa is extremely helpful. As if this weren't enough, chamomile is used in rejuvenation treatments. And, I mean, most of us probably have tried chamomile tea. But now if you have a lot of allergies in the grass family, I think that's one of them in the grass family. Feverfew would be one example. There are a number of herbs that are similar to that. And because of it, if you have a lot of hay fever and what I would recommend is that you maybe put a dot or two on your arm and let it sit and see if you have any kind of a negative reaction to it. You don't want to really jump into something until you know if you're tolerating it okay. Now, eucalyptus. Eucalyptus has been distilled from at least 1788 when two doctors, John White and Dennis Cosiden, distilled eucalyptus piperata for its use in treating chest problems and colic. This was in Australia, where the Blue Mountains of New South Wales are so called because of the extraordinary blue haze that exudes from the resin of the eucalyptus gum and envelops the entire landscape. In such a powerfully aromatic environment, the medicinal qualities of this ancient tree would be hard to miss. Eucalyptus is a marvelously versatile and useful oil. It cools the body in summer and protects it in winter. It is anti-inflammatory, antiseptic, antibiotic, diuretic, analgesic, and deodorizing. Research has proved its antiviral properties as well. It is best known for its effectiveness against coughs and colds, but is equally effective in the treatment of cystitis, candida, diabetes, and sunburn, which also being useful in veterinary practice, as well as an insect repellent. There is a wide range of eucalyptus varieties, any one of which would be useful to a basic care kit. Now, once again, I'm having trouble with this thing. Okay, geranium. Geranium is one of my favorite oils because it works profoundly on the emotions and is used in many medical conditions and smells wonderful while it works so hard. The oil is extracted not from the familiar brightly colored geranium, but from the species Pelargonium. Geranium, Robert, or lemon plant, which is very often displayed in abundance in Greek restaurants. Geranium will make chilblains disappear overnight and brings a radiant glow when used in skincare. Most importantly, it is a vital component in the treatment of endometriosis, is very effective for menopausal symptoms, diabetes, blood disorders, throat infections, and as a nerve tonic, and works well as a sedative. It is reputed to help in cases of uterine and breast cancer, and if nothing else, would certainly help the patient to relax and cope with the pain. Geranium has many applications, from frostbite to infertility, and its antiseptic and astringent properties contribute to its general usefulness. Its delightful floral fragrance makes it a pleasure to use, either on its own or as a contributory oil in blends. Now, rosemary, let's see, we've got a few more minutes here. Rosemary is both a physical and mental stimulant, which makes it a good oil to have in the morning bath, while also being excellent in the treatment of all muscular conditions, making it the perfect oil for a bath after a long, tiring day. This antiseptic oil is used in the treatment of muscular sprains, arthritis, rheumatism, depression, memory loss, migraine, headaches, coughs, flu, and diabetes, among other conditions. It is also very useful in beauty treatments, being used in hair care and acne and cellulite remedies. For the sportsman, cook, and gardener, rosemary is invaluable. I had a cat once that loved rosemary, and I had a rosemary Christmas tree. You've probably seen them in the stores at Christmas. And she would sit there beside it. She'd sit by it, and then she'd lean against it. She loved the smell of it so much. Thyme. There are many types of thyme, some of which can be used safely in all situations and some which cannot. Thyme has notable antiviral, antibiotic, antiseptic, and diuretic properties and should be used with great care. Overuse of it can stimulate the thyroid gland and lymphatic system. Like many good things, it must be used in moderation. It should never be applied to the skin undiluted and should not be used on children unless it is within the chemotype thyme linalool. Thyme is a vital component of the basic care kit because of its powerful antiviral properties. When flu is around, it is a wonderful oil to have in the room diffuser. It assists in the elimination of toxic waste from the body. It is used in the treatment of a wide range of conditions, including whooping cough, warts, rheumatism, neuralgia, fatigue, and acne. It is also extremely useful in antiseptic powders, hair and skin care regimes, and cooking. Just to make it a perfect all-rounder, thyme will discourage all manner of parasites and insects from invading your home. Now, lemon. We are running out of time already. We've got 90 seconds here, so I'm just going to try to get through this quickly. When our adventurous seafaring ancestors sailed the high seas, fresh lemons saved them from getting scurvy. Well, from what I understand, apples did as well. That was from rickets, I think. Anyway, for modern stay-at-homes, the essential oil of lemon is just as useful as a water purifier. This antiseptic and antibacterial oil will perform many tasks when used in blends, including treating insect bites and tension headaches. I'm going to stop here. And if I can find a piece of paper, I'll mark my place here. And we'll talk some more. But those are the ones that are particularly useful. And we'll talk more about others that you should consider keeping and having and why. And I'm going to be giving you recipes. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to do that today. But now for the week, try to get your kits together, both for first aid as well as for your regular disaster supplies. If you don't have a disaster plan, go to ready.gov, read what it says to do, and try to make yourself a plan and discuss it with your family, just in case. It's just a good thing to have. You never know when a tornado or a hurricane or a flood or a huge snowstorm, that kind of thing might hit, and it's a good idea to be prepared for everything if you can. Now, until then, may God bless, and until we meet back here again next weekend as we learn together how to survive the days ahead. Until then, have a good week. God bless.